Welcome to Sabbatical 101. My name is Bethany Walensky, and I'm an associate professor at Michigan State University. I had a life-changing sabbatical, and I'm on a mission to help fellow academics do the same. This podcast is a resource for all things academic sabbaticals. Each episode will provide you with inspiration and insight into the sabbatical planning process, regardless of your institution, discipline, length of sabbatical, or where you plan to sabbatical. I'm so excited to have you along for the ride. Today, my guest is Amy Parks, who is a professor of elementary education at Michigan State University and the author of 4 young adult and middle grade novels about smart girls who are into science and math. In this episode, Amy talks about having a sabbatical during COVID and using her sabbatical to pursue an MFA. I hope you enjoy the conversation and that you'll check out Amy's books. Hi, Amy.
Hey, Bethany.
I'm so excited to talk about your sabbatical today. So before we get started, could you just introduce yourself and tell us briefly about the focus of your scholarship and also about your work writing young adult novels?
Sure. So I'm Amy Parks. I'm a professor at Michigan State, and I work mostly in early math. I'm a former primary grade teacher. And my research really focuses on understanding classrooms from the perspectives of children. So lots of ethnographic work, video work in classrooms, that kind of thing. And then I am also a writer of actually middle grade and young adult books, which I started doing right before my sabbatical and have been doing since.
Great. And we're definitely going to talk more about that writing. It's so exciting. I was just looking at your website the other day, and I didn't realize you have 4 books out now. I am so curious to know how you're doing everything you're doing, because you are a prolific scholar and a prolific author. So it's amazing. Okay, so when was your sabbatical and where were you based?
Well, my sabbatical was in 2020, so it was a little bit different. I started fall of 2020. So when I requested my sabbatical, I did not anticipate the pandemic, but by the time I actually had time off, I knew it was a pandemic, and so I didn't go anywhere. Which was disappointing. I had plans, as I've talked about, to do an MFA, and I did do an MFA, but it went online. And it was always going to be a hybrid program. But one of the things I'd been excited about is that the sabbatical would have allowed me to do these 2 10-day visits to the campus, and those disappeared. I really had to reimagine what I was going to do with that time. And in all honesty, I mean, I spent a lot of that time supporting my kids and managing my own self through that really terrible time.
Yeah, very different sabbatical than what you imagined. And I'm guessing that you applied. So we apply for sabbatical a year before it happens at MSU. So you probably applied in fall 2019.
Yes.
And may have even gotten approved before, you know, the world shut down. So then suddenly there you are with this wonderful sabbatical, but also you have to completely adjust your plans, but also adjust your mindset around kind of what you were doing, it sounds
like. Yeah. And the thing that maybe is transferable, I mean, I hope no one will ever have this direct experience again, is that, I felt guilty for feeling sad, right? Like in many ways, my pandemic was much easier than many people. I didn't have to go out. So concerns for safety were less. At the same time, I was really sad at these like things that I had lost out on that I had been looking forward to. And so I would guess that other people, like there are so many jobs where like there is no concept of a sabbatical. And especially if you have a partner who doesn't have that opportunity, I think that learning to manage whatever guilt you have for getting the space so it doesn't get in the way of you enjoying the space is really important.
Yeah, that's such a good point. Right. How do you kind of own it? Maybe not flaunt it, but also you have this privilege and it's important to make most of it, right? Since you do have access to it. So I want to pause and hear about your people, because I think, you know, we don't plan sabbaticals, most of us, in a vacuum based on just our own individual needs. And so we know that your sabbatical got changed because of COVID, but you also have a family. So could you just tell us who your people are and how their needs factored into your sabbatical plan?
Sure. So I have a husband who is also an academic, but he came into the academy after I did. So he has not yet had a sabbatical. And then two daughters who at the time of my sabbatical were, one was a tween and one was, had just actually started her first year of college. So it was a rough time for her too. And I mean, my family is like really the center of my life. And I know a lot of people say that, but like, it really, really is. So I had never, ever intended to like travel long term. My children would not have wanted to be uprooted at the ages that they are. Mm-hmm. I would not have wanted to be away from them for long periods of time. Actually, when I was applying to the MFA program, I was really anxious about the 10 days. Because I at that point, the longest I'd ever been away from my kids was 3 nights. And I mean, at this point, they were, you know, 19 and 11. So it had been a long time. And I was talking to one of the professors in the MFA program, and she said, if your daughters had this opportunity, what would you want them to do? And I found that really powerful.
Yeah.
In terms of framing like the choices that I was making. So when I designed the sabbatical, I never intended to really be away from home, but I did intend to do this, like, for me, it felt like long-term, but for other people, shorter-term travel that I had never done before.
Yeah. So tell me more about how you designed the sabbatical and what went into your planning and what were your goals for the sabbatical time?
So as I said, I had started writing fiction a couple years before the sabbatical. I had already sold my first novel, but it hadn't come out yet. And so I knew I wanted to spend more time on that and to learn more about it because I'd been doing it pretty much like as a reader. I had read a million young adult books and learned to write it that way. And, you know, I'm an elementary educator. I wanted opportunities to teach children's literature. And I thought having the MFA would give me the background I needed for that. So I started looking into hybrid programs and I found one at Vermont College of the Fine Arts that was 2 years with these 4 10-day stays, one in the winter and one in the summer. And at the time I thought, okay, like I can do one winter stay during my sabbatical. I'll have the 2 summers. And then I was sort of like crossing my fingers and hoping for the other January. I was like, I will figure something out. And so that was really intended to be like the bulk of like my work during it. But I also do a lot of grant funded research. I do work in Tennessee with colleagues. And so I had also intended to like continue that and develop it. Those are really my two big goals.
Okay. So one of the things that I talk to people a lot is like what goes into a sabbatical application. And I know this is different for every institution, but I'm curious when you, if you can remember, was the MFA kind of the main thing that you proposed in your application? And how did you, do you remember how you framed it or justified it in terms of like a contribution to the institution?
Yeah, I think I primarily framed it around like developing this capacity to teach children's literature, right? To diversify what I could do as an elementary educator. And then I also, and I still do, talk about my fiction as public scholarship. So I write books about STEM girls. And I think it's important to have those representations out there. And even though like I have not sold a ton of books, still many, many more people read my fiction books than do my articles. So like, if I think about like, what is my impact in terms of STEM for kids, it's much bigger in terms of my fiction than my research. It just is. And so that was also part of the argument. And then like, just to be realistic, because I have like pretty significant NSF grant activity, I think I get a little more leeway. So if I say, oh, I'm working on developing the next grant, people are like, great, that's exactly what we want you to be doing. And it gives you a little more freedom in other ways. So I think like this is something not just about sabbaticals, but broadly as I thought about being in academia, thinking about like giving the institution what is most important to them and least painful to you, because I love my grant work. It's not like it's a burden to me.
Yeah.
So that you have the space to do the things that you prioritize, but the institution may not.
I love that. How do you create that space? Again, this is not just about sabbatical, but I think people would be interested, because there's also a thing about, you know, you have all this time and space on sabbatical when you're not teaching and doing service. And so you have so much control over your time. How do you then, when you come back from sabbatical and you have this MFA and you're wanting to publish more, like, how do you create the space for your creative work?
Yeah, no, I think that's a really great question. When I came off the sabbatical, my goal was to be really intentional about what I said yes to like not get sucked into the things that didn't feed me. And I the other thing I did during my sabbatical was therapy. And one of the things, maybe the most productive thing my therapist had me do was go through my Google Calendar and look at the upcoming week. And she had me color code things I was looking forward to, things I was dreading, and things I felt neutral about. And then after the week went by, we looked back and said, okay, but were you right? Because sometimes, like, especially I am anxious about something, but then it turns out, you know, I actually really liked it when it happened. And sometimes I'm exactly right. And then she said, okay, so our goal is to reduce the things that make you miserable and increase the things that give you joy. And so I have been trying to think about that as I do that. And I think I've been varyingly successful. Like, there are all these pressures, right? Both from the institution and from social relationships. But like, one of the things I was like happiest with about like a decision I made after sabbatical was I was asked to take on a service role that I really did not want. And I was really aware that at this stage in my career, like, money was not what I needed, right? I needed time. Like, I'm old enough that time is just more precious now. And so I said, I don't want summer funding. I don't want a course release. What I want is to be released of all service. And so I had a year where my only service was this role. And so I did not like the role, but I also didn't like any of the other things that I was giving up. And so it like minimized that, instead of like giving up my teaching, which I love, or giving up like time with my family in the summer, which I absolutely don't want to do. So I think sometimes in academia, we get locked into ways of doing it. But the truth is, we have a lot more freedom than most people to design our work. And I think we have to do it intentionally. I don't know. I was having this other conversation. This is, again, maybe off track, but I don't know if you edit this.
I edit it very lightly, but that's okay. I want to hear it.
So I was talking to someone about awards and just like how much time it takes to apply for awards, like for everyone involved. I was just like, I hate them and I don't think we should do them. And she said, oh, but you need awards for tenure. And I was like, do you? Because if you do the work, no, you don't.
Right.
You know, so I think there are stories that we tell each other about, oh, you have to do this, you have to do that. But if you step back and say, do we really have to do that? Often the answer is no.
I agree. And I think a lot of times, probably especially for women, it's harder to say no because you feel like, or you're part of it is a fear of saying no and that I'm going to disappoint someone or I'll be disadvantaged down the line. But I love the example of you thinking about kind of like, what's if there's kind of a menu of things I don't really feel like doing, but I have to do one of them, how can I like position it so that I'm giving the institution what it wants, but I'm getting something that I want and need as well? And being really thoughtful about that, because I 100% agree with you that often money is not the thing that's the most useful. Time is like the greatest currency. So,
and at a different stage in my life, maybe, you know, I would have answered that question differently, but. So I think that's also true, is being in touch with where you are in your life.
Yeah. And I love this idea of just like being clear with yourself about what energizes you and what drains you, and trying to like stack things so that you have more things that energize you and fewer things that drain you. And there might be ways to kind of like rethink or do the things that drain you in a different way so they're not as draining. And 100%. Often, yeah. we're just so in it. I feel like for me, pre-tenure, it's like you're on the hamster wheel. You don't have time to think about how you could do something differently.
So. Well, and I know this was true for you. It was true for me. And I think a lot of women, that was also when you had young kids, right?
Yes.
Where the time demands are so much more intense. And so like, yeah, if you're raising toddlers and you're pre-tenure, those are the two things you're doing.
Right.
And there just exactly. isn't time for anything else.
Yeah. No time to rethink things. But it sounds like, so it sounds like on your sabbatical, you were working on your MFA, you were doing some other research projects that were ongoing. And then you were taking care of yourself too. You
yeah.
had therapy. Were there other sort of personal priorities that you had during your sabbatical?
I mean, again, this is so specific to the time, but my kids, particularly my younger daughter, had some serious mental health challenges in the pandemic. And I would say my primary goal was getting her through it, healthy, alive, out the other side. And like we did that. And honestly, if that's the only thing that came out of my sabbatical, I have no complaints. That, you know, like, was it a time of great self-care for me? No, it really wasn't. But it was a time where I was able to focus on my family in the way that I needed to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. What do you think helped you pivot? So as you kind of realized what was happening with COVID and it became clear that the year you had planned was not going to be, you weren't going to have yeah. the year that you planned. How did you manage that? Or what did you have any strategies that you used to kind of reimagine it? So it wasn't, because I'm not hearing, I feel like one narrative could be like, oh, I had this like just terrible sabbatical because it was during COVID. And, it, you know, it sounds like it was really challenging, but at the same time, there were, you know, positive things that came out of it, or you were yeah. able to do some of the things you wanted to do.
I think that's true. I mean, for me, actually, the MFA was really important, more important than I think it would have been had it not been COVID. Mm-hmm. Like, it gave me structure
yeah.
and it gave me a community of people who, like, may not have been on sabbatical, but were all looking forward to having, like, they had all chosen to have this experience this year, and it was all radically shifted. But also, you know, it was an educational institution that was trying to move all this online. So like I was having these interactions with people, other like new YA writers. And so like, I think that community, helped. I had deadlines because of that. So yeah. like I was turning in work for it. So it made me keep writing in a way that maybe I would have like give it up on or taken a break from if I didn't have that. And then, you know, so much of what I planned for my sabbatical was reading and writing that, it wasn't as interrupted as doing something else. And I guess the one thing I did, toward the end, like once we got into maybe, I don't know, November, December, and it started to feel a little calmer, or like the following spring, was I did a couple of just like 2-day writing retreats, like really nearby, where I yeah. rented a hotel room by myself. Like I didn't speak to anyone. I ordered food. Like, so I was still pretty isolated, but it was out of my house, and it let me just really focus on my work for 48 hours. I remember those like periods really fondly.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure kind of like because of COVID, you know, like layering on all those things. So just that opportunity to be out of your house, because at that time, yeah, it's like I can't even remember back to how we used to live during that time. But yes. I feel like that was a year that we were just still terrified that like school was going to close down, daycare was going to close down, you know, everything felt so uncertain.
Yeah.
And so being able to just like carve out, and we were still so together as a family,
yes.
which was lovely, but also very intense.
Yes. No, as an introvert, it was very draining. Yeah. Yes. It was hard.
I know. I think about like you know, I commute to MSU and it's an hour. And it, on the one hand, that's kind of annoying, but also it gives me some decompression.
Yep.
At the end of the day. And I, by the time I get home, I'm ready to like be a mom again and hear about everyone's day. And during COVID, I was in my basement and all I had to do was walk upstairs and I was like,
no, yeah, 100%. When I was a teacher, I went from teaching at a school where I drove an hour to teaching at a school where I drove 5 minutes. And I didn't even have kids then, but I still felt like, oh, this transition is way too fast.
Yes, we need
to drive around the block.
Amy needs to work on her transitions.
That's right.
Like, seriously. So as you look back on your sabbatical, obviously there were things that you couldn't control because of COVID, but kind of globally, is there anything you wish you had done differently or things that you would do differently in the future if you have another sabbatical?
I honestly don't think so. You know, I think I did the right sabbatical for me. It's possible on the next one that like I will travel more, not just because of COVID, but because my kids will both be out of the house at that point. And so I think it will feel really different to think about like going somewhere. But the truth is, I just really wanted time where people were not making demands on me. Mm-hmm. And I think at least I got that from work, right? Where work was not making demands on me. And that was really it. I don't know. I think like I'm so grateful for my sabbatical. I think like especially for my fiction work, it was really freeing. At the same time, I really love my job. Like I feel lucky every day that this is the work I do. So it's not like I feel like, oh, I really need to like recover or whatever. Which I know is not how everyone feels. But.
Yeah, but you make a good point about how really everyone needs a different kind of sabbatical to do a different kind of thing. And sometimes it can be hard to see that. So in our department, we do these lovely sabbatical reports when you come back. And that's nice, but also it's a limited view of what a sabbatical can be. And so part of what I'm trying to do in my work is just like open up possibilities or also say that like, you know, if you're, whether you go away, whether you stay home, these are all valid choices and that they can be equally meaningful, right? We don't just have to prioritize, you know, the exotic sabbatical, right?
No, that reminds me that at MSU anyway, in the application, they say if they're asking for a year, they'd like evidence that you're like traveling or something that you couldn't do otherwise. So I know part of like my thinking about the MFA was strategic, like knowing I really did not want to go live somewhere else, but being able to say, oh, I need to spend these 10 days away and I couldn't do it otherwise. Like I felt like gave me a little wedge in the application to say, this is what I want. So
yeah. At the same time, I hate that. I mean, I remember seeing that when I was writing my application too and thinking, well, I feel like the world has changed. This is not kind of the, you know, one income household where, you know, where you have this flexibility to move your family abroad for a semester or a year, right? It's just not. And I think people feel a lot of guilt around that, which just doesn't, you know, I think we should be able to take the sabbaticals that we need. And
100%.
You know, when you have high schoolers and they don't want to go somewhere for a year, like for a semester, that's totally reasonable. So you shouldn't have to just, I guess I wish we didn't have to justify it to MSU why, you know, why you're not going away. But
yeah, no, anyway. Yeah, that's just a case though where I think you find the path that will please them. And
yes, exactly. So did you ever get to go away for the in-person component?
I did. Or was it our last residency was during the summer and we went to Vermont. And so I did get that experience.
Lovely. That's great. Did your whole family go or did you just
by
yourself?
Yeah, just me. Yeah. We were living in terrible dorms. Like in some ways the experience was terrible. Like the like, you know, physicalness of it.
Yeah.
But, the intellectual experience was amazing.
Well, that's so great. And what's happening now with your writing? What's kind of coming up next for you?
Well, my most recent book came out in March, April Offline, which is a middle grade book. So like 10 to 13 year olds. which was a lot of fun, and working on the next ones.
That's so great. And where can people find your books? We can also put a link in the show notes, but tell us where to find you.
Anywhere books are sold. So they may not physically be in all bookstores, but any book will be able to order them. They're certainly on Barnes & Noble websites, Target, Amazon, all those things.
Okay, awesome. Well, my daughter is 6, so we are not quite there
yet.
You are
a little ways off.
We're a little ways off, but I will be looking forward to it because I was thinking about our chapter book collection, and because I have my older child is a boy, and we have actually a lot of STEM focused books with male protagonists, because he was very into these like Frank Einstein and I don't know, other like inventors and things. But I was like, oh, our book collection is really male protagonist heavy, so we need to be working on that a little bit.
So, yeah, well, there's a lot of great books out there.
Yeah.
Happy to talk about that too.
Great. So the last question I have for you is, what advice would you give someone planning a sabbatical right now?
I think it would be like the same advice I give to my dissertation students, which is to really think about what you want. Mm-hmm. There are these moments in our lives, in our academic lives, where we're a little bit more free from other people's pressures and expectations. And I think the dissertation is one, and the sabbatical is one. And I think talking to people about the kinds of sabbaticals they had, you know, I had a colleague who wrote a book of poems on her sabbatical, and that was something that made me think, oh, fiction is possible. Mm-hmm. As a focus. But don't have a sabbatical trying to live up to some expectations that aren't yours. That's silly.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Well, and thank you for sharing your story, because I think you're opening up new possibilities for people who might be thinking about a creative pursuit during their sabbatical, but didn't think it was possible. So I love your story and what you have to offer the world, Amy. Thank you. Oh,
thank you. This was so fun.
I hope you found this episode of Sabbatical 101 helpful and inspirational as you think about your own sabbatical. If you want to read more about sabbaticals or get even more support for planning your own life-changing sabbatical, head over to my website, www.bethanywalinsky.com, to read my blog and for more information about my sabbatical coaching program.